Good evening and welcome to the Cycles of Change radio program. I'm your host, David Katzmar, coming to you live as I do every Thursday night at 8 p.m. New York time, 5 p.m. Pacific. Here on October 11th, 2012, this program was pre-recorded on October 9 at 5 p.m. The galaxy, the great movements and the great cycles beyond our earthly experience. Do they have seasons? Are there tidal influences as we move in our cyclical ride around the galaxy? Here to discuss this tonight is Alan Steinfeld of New Reality TV, which you can find at newrealities.com. Alan Steinfeld is the creator and the host of New Realities Television, which is cast on the Time Warner Network in New York, and you can find it on the web. The mission of his website at newrealities.com is to identify new realities that are emerging on this planet. That means that the way people think about themselves and the world are changing. There is an influx of higher knowledge that is emanating from the unknown. The veil between the dimensions is getting thinner, and many people are opening up to the new experience that some have called spiritual. But he says we should not limit ourselves to the use of that word. He prefers to say that new realities are expanding our abilities to be more human, to feel more of the subtleties of our incarnational experience. Mr. Steinfeld's personal quest is to connect with the consciousness of that spirit, and in so doing, he has researched and discovered fascinating elements related to our discussion on the galactic cycles through which we and our solar system move. This great cycle brings great seasons of change through the millennia of human evolution and development. These great seasons and more will be the focus of our talk tonight. So here to discuss this is Alan Steinfeld of New Realities at newrealities.com. Alan, are you there?
I'm here. Do you hear me, David?
I hear you a little bit fuzzy, but I can still hear you well enough.
Okay, let me see if I lift my sound. Is that better like that?
It seems to be pretty good. Not
okay.
Bad.
Okay. All right. I mean, okay, I'll do the best I can right here. I like the introduction. I love what you're doing with cycles, because as we see, everything is cyclical. Everything that we see around us has a pattern, and cycles are patterns of time. So by noticing patterns of time, we can predict certain behaviors and certain responses to behaviors. I think that's the importance of looking at patterns. Patterns create our understanding of the world.
Absolutely. And it's not just when to plant your crops, whether it's fall or autumn, but it's also, as you point out, in understanding the subtleties of human behavior. There are tides in the affairs of man, and if we can understand how this affects us in the trends of our society, whether you want to sell red neckties or black neckties, or whether you want to sell sports cars or sedans, or whether you're just looking to understand how to put the nuances in your novel based on what's going to appeal to people and be reflected to them, you've got to know where we are, and where we are is determined by where we are in a cycle.
Right, and I think we're approaching a very interesting time. I go back to tracing this knowledge of galactic cycles back to when I first heard Jose Agüez talk about the ending of the Mayan calendar, and this, of course, is something on everybody's mind here as we approach that date at the end of 2012, December 21st, 2012. Well, I first heard Jose Agüez talk about that in 1986. Mm-hmm. So really, for 26 years, I've been waiting this date and researching it and seeing what is so significant and what no one ever talks about, really. That actually, I've talked about galactic cycles. No one ever talks about the plane of inclination. So I'll retrace my steps. The most obvious cycles that we experience on Earth are the seasons, right?
Right.
So the summer, winter, spring, and fall, that is determined by the angle of the Earth's axis to the solar plane, which is 23 degrees, 23 and a half degrees. The Earth is tilted towards the solar plane.
Yes.
So when the tilt is facing the sun, or when the northern hemisphere tilt is facing the sun, then we have summer. When the southern here tilt is facing the sun, and we have winter in the north and summer in the south, right? Everyone
right.
Can visualize that. because the Earth's angle stays the same. It doesn't rotate on its axis back and forth. It stays positioned in relationship to the solar plane.
Yes.
Do you see what I mean? I hope people get the visual of this. It's usually a PowerPoint. So I looked at this idea of 2012 and this approaching that we were below the galactic horizon. And as we mark that date of December 21st, 2012, we come to the equator, the equilateral horizon, or the sun does, in relationship to the galactic center. But what people don't talk about is that the solar plane, the equator of the sun and all the planets that are generated pretty much in alignment to the solar plane, is at an angle to the galactic plane, around 63 degrees. Now,
yes.
That's much, isn't that amazing?
Yes.
So, I mean, there's a whole physics about why things like galaxies and solar planes are flattened, and I think Nassim Harmin has the best physics in explaining why things tend to flatten because of the two forces of electromagnetism and gravity each exerting their own pull on things that tend to flatten anything that go in rotation. I guess we could say the same thing as looking at soap going down the drain, you know. There's a sort of flat on the surface. So anyway, so I looked at this idea that the solar plane is inclined to the galactic plane by 60-something degrees, and that's much greater than the inclination of the Earth's plane to the sun, which is only 23 degrees. So if I look at those numbers and see that if we have winter when the Earth axis is facing away from the sun, then maybe we had a sort of winter when our solar plane was facing away from the galactic plane. And as we come above the galactic horizon, we come into the springtime of creation, a kind of a springing forward into a new time. And then I go and expound upon that theory, saying that perhaps the latent structures embedded in our brain will start to bloom, that we'll have a renaissance of humanity, that we will have an awakening of consciousness that wasn't with us in these dark ages. And we have been in the dark ages. You know, the 20th century saw more people killed. What was it, 60 million people killed in war in the 20th century alone?
Yeah.
Well, that was the end. Starvation, war, suffering, greed, corruption. I mean, whatever you want to call the dark ages of humanity, we've done it, we've had it, and perhaps it's finished. And perhaps as we move above the galactic equator, we will be receiving more light, which is more information. And my theory is we will be awakening the dormant structures in our brain that activate a greater humanity, that wake up our ability for empathy, compassion, love, sympathy, harmony. They've been in us. Some people have awakened. There's been great masters that have awakened to that, but the collective of humanity has pretty much been asleep. And I think they've been waiting for this time to wake up.
Well, you're really reaching a lot of the aha part of my brain resonance here, and I'm beginning to really understand there's a fractal relationship between everything. So just as we think about our Earth going around the sun, we should think about the whole solar system going around the galactic center, just like a planet goes around the sun. And that creates great seasons.
Well, of course. And the thing is that there's no, I mean, not to argue with your whole thesis, but I don't believe necessarily in cycles as opposed to spirals. I mean, the Earth never goes back to the same place it was. And the sun is moving. So we are spiraling through space as a kind of passenger to our great sun as it rotates around the center of the Milky Way galaxy.
Now, how long does it take for our solar system to go around the galactic center?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I had that statistic. I think that takes maybe a million or so. so years. But within that cycle, the sun is actually moving below the galactic equator and above.
Yes.
That
so we're making a wave-like up and down bobbing motion as we go around the galactic center?
Exactly. And that's what the Mayans measured. That's what takes 20,000 years to go from the low point up and then back to the low point. So
how long is that again, Alan? Your phone had a little skip in it. How many thousands of years does it take to go up and down above the galactic plane or our solar system?
26,000 years. That's what the Mayans counted.
Wow.
As part
count. Well, isn't that similar to the precession of the equinoxes from which we get the great zodiac year, the great year?
Exactly, exactly. It's all in relationship. You know, we're looking at the same stars. They just counted it up different ways. So so it's broken into four parts, and that's where we're going. Those are the four cycles as we So we let's say we start at the even at the galactic plane and we move below it, that's one. Then we hit the bottom of that, move up, that's two. And then we hit the above the galactic equator to the top of that trough, that's three. And then back down again, that's four. So now we're moving up again. So like the Earth, like all things, there's more than one movement that's happening. Put it all in perspective. Yes, the Earth is spinning. We're going around the sun. The sun is moving around the galaxy as it moves up and down over the galactic equator as that galaxy is being pulled further and further out into space. So,
that's true. Hey, I like to put things into physical models, too. When you speak about the solar system going, bobbing up and down as it goes around the galactic center, what comes to mind for me is a merry-go-round where you see the horses going up and down as they go around on the wheel of the merry-go-round. Would that be the same as our solar system going around the galactic center?
That is a great way of looking at it. I haven't thought. I'm going to have to use that in my lectures. Thank you for that.
Simple works fine for me. It works in my brain.
It's also like a clock, you know, in a sense. All clock, there's second hands and minute hands and hour hands and days and
yes.
weeks. And so there's all these spirals, all these cycles. But the thing about clocks is that we don't see that the spirals of life are happening, that we keep creating
right.
space and time. And that's what's so exciting about this time, because if the Mayans, what they predicted is right, and what Terence McKenna, another visionary, I think we met around Terence McKenna, didn't we?
Yes, back in 1993, when he spoke at the Open Center, I had the privilege of meeting you at that time. And it's been a very rewarding experience having to have met you.
Yeah, and I went along with Jose Aguayes said that 2012 would be the end of time as we know it.
Mm.
And that's, so he says, according to his cycles of time, is that that we are recapitulating all of history now in 2012. So there's these great cycles that create mini cycles, that create minor cycles, and in the last 4 days of 2012, before December 21st, all of history will be recapitulated. So in order to explain that further, he says something like the Renaissance was a recapitulation of the Golden Age of Greece, like the 60s was a recapitulation of Renaissance.
Yes.
And so we have these minor cycles that mirror what Terence's idea was, the rise of novelty.
Yes.
So Warren says when we get to that point, December 21st, 2012, we have an increase of novelty happening at an accelerated rate. That means the genius and the creativity of humanity starts to really bubble over. And what he says happens, and this might blow your theory a little bit, he says at that point, history will be history, which means that on sunrise, December 21st, we go off into a totally new direction of humanity that there's no previous record of. We go off the map. There's no cycles to record. We are paving a new way in uncharted territory. This is McKenna's view of the time wave zero that he talks about that happened.
There it is, folks. By the end of this year, we're going to wake up one day and say history just ain't what it used to be. You know, you touch on a very brilliant thing, Alan, when you talk about the fractal relationship of historic eras, where the 1960s was reflective of a golden era, and how you can look at the small eras within the nation within a decade or so many decades being a reflection of greater cycles throughout the entire world history that may take centuries. And then that itself might be a fractal reflection of the ages of the Stone Age, the Bronze Age, and the Silver Age, and so forth. And when we start looking at these relationships and understand the underlying influences of energy, regardless of the special events, but the overall influence of energies, then we can recognize the spirit of the times that are in eras great and small, see the fractal relationship to that, and then as we understand history and understand our times as we lift our head above the herd, we can see that there is a fractal relationship in this sped up recapitulation of the eras as we approach 2012. And what do I mean by sped up? Well, Terence McKenna believes that there are vortexes in time, and this fractal relationship and more will go at an ever more accelerated rate on some algorithm or what have you as we reach that zero point, December 21, 2012 in this case. And so the recapitulation will become more and more accelerated and compressed until we hit that time. Now, Alan, on December 21st, 2012, are we going to be at a significant point in relationship of our solar system to the galactic plane we're in?
Exactly, exactly. And this is what the Mayans saw, how they saw it with some kind of enhanced visual acuity, according to Terence McKenna, principally a mushroom. But they saw that it, at December 21st, 2012, we'll be aligned with what they call the dark rift, the exact conjunction of the black hole that's at the center of our galaxy. So there's a black hole, and there's a sort of there's sort of no stars, I think, at that. From what I've been able to research, it seems like we have a straight on view to the galactic center at that point. And the Mayans called that the womb of creation. So out of that womb, out of that dark hole, will be birthed anew. The sixth sun, sixth root race will emerge, which is us, out of that exact conjunction. And if you studied astrology at all, you know that, and I'm sure you have because of the show that you're doing, there's a whole different significance to almost conjunctions as opposed to exact conjunctions. When you have an exact alignment of the sun and the moon and the earth, you have a total eclipse. There's nothing like a total eclipse. A 90% eclipse is not a total eclipse, where it's total darkness. So when we have that exact alignment of the Earth, the Sun, and the galactic center, I think something else comes online. I think something is sparked. This is just my theory. Of course, we'll see. But like I said about a total eclipse, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like a total conjunction in an exact alignment that will be happening at that moment. And, of course, other people have disagreed, saying, well, we have a couple of thousand years to move through that galactic center. But I think there's something about that moment, that winter solstice, that is an alignment all the way through creation, back to who we were as human beings that created these bodies and incarnated in the first place.
An echo. If we can have a fractal relationship between eras, great and small, then maybe we can have an echo at the transitional point of an exact eclipse with the dawn of creation or endings of creation as castles crumble. Every time a cycle goes up into the high half, across the middle, or down from a high half into a low, across the middle again, you're going to have a transitional point where we're shifting gears, as it were. Equilibrium is neither high nor low. There is a bit of turbulence, a bit of shakeup, but that's in order for us to be able to do something different. And it's amazing that the Mayans were able to calculate this with their brilliant astronomy, which was far ahead of anything in Europe or anywhere else in the world. They knew the precession of the equinoxes. They knew the duration of the orbit of Venus before anybody. The largest pyramids on Earth exist not in Egypt, but in South and Central America and so forth. We're only discovering them now. We thought they were mountains. So in all of this experience, you're mentioning the Mayan calendar ending on December 21st, 2012. This is part of what's called a long count. This is a cycle that they count sequentially for more than 5,125 years. It last ended on August 31st, 311 BC. The next time it's ending here is December 21st, 2012. And you're right, Alan. We are going to be on a galactic ecliptic at that time. So where are we going on this, Alan? Are we going from a low to a high? Are we going from high to a low? Are we shifting from summer to spring or summer to fall?
I want to make that clear. We are going from the low point in the trough to the equator. They are heading up. Our solar plane is heading into spring. So it's a sort of equinox. So that is the point of transition. I know you talk a lot about that in your cycles. And that's the exact point we'll be at now. So that last 5,125 years was from the low point to the equator. And that
so that means I can take my winter coat off by losing my attitude and welcoming the spring?
Well, the spring, like I say, well, you know how you feel good in the spring? You know how you want to go out? You want to, the sun shines, you're just baking in the sun. There's like a renewed lease on life and energy. Yeah. Well, think of parts of that have been of our mind, of our brain that have laid dormant in this winter of our discontent, as we call it, and are about to be awakened at this moment of equinox, of springtime, of enlivening. This is what we have to look forward to. We've already been through the winter, and then people have called it, I mean, the Hindus called it the Kali Yuga.
Yeah.
And they all kind of line up. Supposedly the Kali Yuga also started on that date in August 3,114 years B.C. Mm-hmm. At the same time that Jose Agüez also mapped the unification of Upper and Lower Egypt happening on that day, which he said marked the myth of progress. Mm-hmm. The myth of progress, meaning that our technology started to advance on that day, thinking that we were going to create machines that were more advanced than our brain. I mean, that's the ridiculousness of this technological age. Of course, it helps us. It helps us communicate. But there's nothing more advanced than the mechanism we have inside of us that is now awakening. So that's what this time is so exciting. And
you're absolutely right. Yes.
I just want to comment one more thing about the 2012 moment, that even if nothing happens, what the idea of this galactic alignment does is create a bigger neighborhood. So let's say there was nothing else, but it gives us a view that we're not just our solar system. For so long, we've looked at the planets moving around, and in a way, we knew there was a sun, but we didn't realize the sun was part of a bigger community. So it's as if, you know, you suddenly realize you're not just living in New York City, you're living in New York State, which is in the U.S., which is part of a whole continent. So it's like that's being infused into a collective awareness that, hey, guess what, guys, we're part of a bigger neighborhood. And so that creates new possibilities. Just like Copernicus, you know, what did it really matter that the Earth wasn't the center of the universe? Well, what happened was when we realized that, new ideas of exploration, of intellectual understanding were able to evolve as a byproduct of the Copernican revolution. So that is my thesis of what will happen now. Now that we realize we're part of a larger framework of possibilities, other things start to unfold within the general intellect of humanity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's an ironic thing that the greater expansion of our consciousness, the smaller and more insignificant we find our position, but the more divine we realize ourselves to be.
Exact great way of putting it, David. You are a poet. But it's also realizing that even in this, you know, if we look at who we are, if we look at we're a speck on this planet that's rotating around a sun that's actually a very small star in relationship to the capacity of stars, in relationship to one galaxy in the sea of billions and billions of galaxies. You know, there are more stars in heaven than there are grains of sand on all the beaches in the world. I mean, how is that possible? It's totally mind-boggling. How do we have any significance in that scheme of things? Because we have to know that consciousness, is a center of all creation. So what we see out there in space is really a reflection of the infinity, the infinitude that lies within us. So in a sense, we are the center of creation, even though it looks like we're insignificant.
And there's omnipresence because every point is the center, and we can realize that just as you get in higher planes of consciousness, fourth dimensional thinking. I've even heard it called Christ consciousness, where the past, present, and the future are said to be happening all at the same time. Bit mind-boggling as we go into our three-dimensional reality of the time-space continuum and everything. But even in the physical realm of analysis, the quantum physicists are telling us that the reason why it appears that two particles apart from each other have a quantum entanglement where they both move at the same time, what happens to one influences the other one, is simply because it's the same particle in two places. Doesn't make sense to us, except that that particle is our intersection with something in a higher dimension that is intersecting with our dimension. Put it simply, it's kind of like we as fish don't realize that 2 feet in the same pond are part of the same living organism.
Well, let me throw out another question about entanglement that none of the physicists have been able to answer. If there was a basic singularity where we came from a point of singularity that exploded out, then weren't all particles entangled at one point in space and time? And if all particles were entangled at one point, then whatever happens to one particle then affects every other particle, and maybe even perhaps there's really only one particle here that ever existed at all.
Exactly. Separation is an illusion, or as the Hindus say, Maya. Maya is an illusion. It has nothing to do with Maya, the name in Central America. And they say that it is from Bindu, the zero point of creation from which everything emanated. Well, the scientists are now talking about Big Bang Theory, whether you believe it in it or not. It is reflecting that thought. The Hindus, in Sanskrit, say that from the unmanifest, the Bhakya, comes the manifest. And in the substratum of the universe, there is all the things that make everything that we can see, feel, hear, smell, and touch. Now scientists are talking about that at least 2/3 of everything in the universe is dark matter. It's invisible. You can't measure it. You can't see it. You can barely find it. You can only see hints of its existence through its reverberations and the things we can see, but that's most of what's there. So the further we move forward in our advancement of sciences, the more we're catching up with the past.
Well, let me throw a couple of things out. I'm not sure about dark matter, since it's a kind of hypothesis. Maybe dark matter is consciousness itself, perhaps. But the other thing I'd like to throw out there is the idea that there are no such thing as coincidences. So what you call Maya in the Hindu understanding of illusion, perhaps that's what the Mayans or the Maya of Mexico were showing us, that this whole existence is really Maya, and we'll be coming into that awareness as we move into this galactic inclination, as the solar plane moves above the galactic horizon, meaning that we open up consciousness to see that the world itself is Maya, just like the Mayans maybe thought it always was.
We should consider that, because you're right. There's no such thing as coincidences. We just need to recognize those things. Now, as we move into this great, great spring, which is going to influence our consciousness, how does it affect our consciousness? What does elevated consciousness mean? Are we more aware on the subtler level? Are we going to consider things that are greater and outside of ourselves? Are we going to have greater understanding of each other? Are we going to have emotional intelligence? What might that mean for civilization, and has it been in our civilization before?
All right, great question, because that really comes into the next part of my thesis. So the first part is showing our position and our relationship and how this is actually awakening parts of who we are that have laid dormant in the incarnational experience of humanity. So what I say is that we're waking up to fifth-dimensional reality. The spring is waking up the multidimensional aspect of our being. And let me explain that. Okay, so you say we live in a three-dimensional world. Yes, our bodies live in the three-dimensional world. But you know what? Our minds live not in the three-dimensional. Most of our reality is taken up with relationships to each other, with relationships to things and objects, how we feel. It's taken up with the psychology of who we are. So really, the plane, the existence that we live in, is not physical. It's psychological. It's an emotionally based reality. And I call that the fourth dimension. I say, okay, great. We have a body, of course. We have to acknowledge that. But that's not where we live. Most people live in their mind, emotion, relationship to the world. And that's been the dramas of human existence, okay? Does that person like me? Does they hate me? I love that person. I don't, you know, I'm angry. I'm happy. No, this has been the ongoing story of humanity. But along the way, there have been people who've woken up to another level that realized they weren't their emotions. They weren't their dramas. They were able to see a greater plane, that their consciousness was really the observer of those emotions. Most people don't realize that. That's the fourth dimension. They think, oh, I'm upset, so they're upset. They don't see that they are observing what's happening. So as we move into the spring of our galactic awakening, we start to come online with the idea that we are moving to a new reality. That's why I call my show New Realities, which I call, and you call anything, a fifth-dimensional awareness. And that includes experience like astral projection, telepathy, near-death experiences are becoming, in a way, more and more popular, or more people are talking about them and showing that they are the consciousness that can observe the reality. UFOs, these things that call on consciousness to be the observer, is what is awakening in the multidimensional aspect of the human being. So we'll no longer be held, and if you want to, you can be, by the dramas of human incarnational experience. We're waking up to the true significance of what it is to be a spiritual being in creation. And that doesn't mean we have to discount the emotional reality. It's just like we have to feed the body, we have to nourish the body, we have to take care of our psychology. But what I'm formulating is a post-psychological theory of humanity, meaning that psychology cannot explain everything that's going on here. It can explain a lot of it, and we don't want to ignore it, but it doesn't explain the things like telepathy, or why people see ghosts, or what an out-of-body experience is, or how do I know someone's calling. There's another paradigm that supersedes the psychological one. And it was an important one to get us where we are, and like most stepping stones, we have to leave it behind. I mean,
I'm glad you're focusing on this. Yeah.
We're not throwing it out. There's still a human psychology, but it's not the end-all, be-all explanation of what's happening, because there's too many anomalies that we've seen in the past 25 years that cannot be explained in psychological terms. I mean, just the whole idea of the popularity of channeling. Well, if you were to explain that in psychological terms, you'd say these people were totally crazy. But if you explain them in the higher fifth-dimensional way, you say perhaps consciousness is a non-local event that's tapping into other aspects of creation. That's the post-psychological thesis. And not to deny, well, yeah, there are some people who are really crazy as well. So it comes down to what I'm calling the paradigm of experience, and to trust that there's something beyond our own mind that knows more than the dogmas of the psychological box that that goes hand in hand with the mechanistic paradigm of science that have locked us in. We have to expand beyond it. Does that make sense?
it makes sense to me that if we start realizing these things about ourselves and focusing more on them, that we're going to have a greater recognition of what this spring is really all about. We're more than our experience. We're more than our temporal existence. And there is the element of the autonomous self that we must reach through the quiet, through the physical causality of our daily experience, and not just be limited by things that are palpable. Because after all, I mean, Upper and Lower Egypt were putting, investing all of their creation and focal points on things that are physical and are real. Well, that's great. But now we're going to find that those vessels don't get us across new seas, because the new seas are greater than that which we experience in the physical realm. That's part of the new spring that we're going into, and that we're going to go into it as of December 21st, 2012, because it's time, and it's time because the seasons of the solar system in the galaxy. Is that right, Alan?
Exactly, and other things come online as well. That's a great summation of exactly what, I think we should transcribe this interview, but that is a great summation of what I mean. But there's other aspects as well that come online in this great awakening that is awakening the parts of our brain and mind consciousness that have been asleep. So the idea of energy, the feeling of energy, the sensing of energy, the idea of the field itself, what has happened, what Lynn McTaggart really brought to the consciousness of Western culture is the idea that we live in a field, a morphogenetic, our field of humanity. It was Rupa Chopra named the morphogenetic field. But yeah, we are in a field of radiance. We're all in a field. So you can feel someone else's field and pick up information from the field. So it's kind of mirrored in our understanding of what the internet's all about as well. So, I mean, there's a field that we can pick up the internet. So as we awaken more of who we are, we pick up more of a field of consciousness. And the other key element that we have to remember as we approach what I call the fifth dimension, this awakening, is that we are part of a collective consciousness. Yes. That we, if you look at the Princeton experiments, the EGG experiments, do you know about that?
The electroencephalograph experiments, yes.
No, the the electronic coin tosses that measure events around the planet with a rise in patterns. Do you know
indeed.
About that, Roger?
No, well, sir, Roger, I don't. Tell us.
I'll tell you. Roger Nelson had these, what they called an electric coin toss, placed at many places around the planet. And an electric coin toss means it was either zero or ones, and, you know, there's a 50-50 chance. And most of the time, there's a zero or ones, and it's a 50-50 chance of either one coming up. When there's not that happening, when there's a pattern of more ones than zeros that are happening, there's certain... usually there's some kind of human event that is affecting the patterns in these electric coin tosses. So you can look at these electric coin tosses and you can see when there's like some intention on the part of humanity is somehow affecting the mechanism of these haphazard events. And so Roger Nelson started to track these things, and like at New Year's, at the major world events, there's this peak in a pattern that is not just the random 50-50 zeros and ones. So he noticed, like, let's say around 9/11, there was this huge spike in the patterns that were happening on this electronic coin toss that were unexplainable, except for the fact that human consciousness collectively affects these things. But the amazing thing that Roger Nelson discusses, and it's also in this movie called Wake Up, is that even before the planes hit the building, 4 hours before those planes hit the building on September 11, 2001, there was already an increase in the pattern creation in those electronic coin tosses, meaning that was some kind of collective premonition of a world event that was going to happen.
This parallels what's called the WebBot Project, Alan, which they are analyzing all the activity on the web, and they found that there was a certain increase of what they analyze in all the web traffic in the WebBot project just prior to the planes crashing on 9/11. And they also say that they keep finding that everything that they're studying now, still ongoing, points toward September 21, 2011. So if folks, if you want to read a little bit more about the amazing results on this, that's the WebBot project.
2012, everything that is, so you're saying there's a kind of overall analysis of the web?
Of the web, yes. It was originally done by a group of financial researchers that wanted to get a handle on how they might place their investments, and they never expected to find that what they might be doing is putting their finger on the pulse of the consciousness as reflected through the internet, which connects us all around the world. And they started to find that they were able to do a lot more analysis beyond any financial investments that they intended. And they said that, well, it's almost like you're listening in on the party line of the mind of the world. And when they pointed out, before the economic bubble burst, they found activity right before the planes crashed in September 2001. There was a great spike in activity, and that they find that there is a convergence of all things coming in on 2012, December 21st. There is a convergence in prophecies and predictions. When you look at many of the Native American stories across Native Americans converged on the United Nations in 1993, which was the year of the indigenous peoples. They brought stories and tales with them from all around the continent. And there seemed to be amazing similarities as they told of the tales that they had been carrying in their tribal lines for a great deal of time. When you look at the Hopi prophecies, now, there are differences in how to interpret that and how they carry it, whether you're from the third Mesa Plateau or the fourth Mesa Plateau. Some of it is somewhat allegorical, but some of it is hard to dismiss. There seems to be a convergence on this time, too, saying that we will go from the fourth world to the fifth world. And, of course, there's the Mayan calendar and more on and on, all pointing to the same time. A confluence, as you were saying in the beginning of this conversation, Alan, that you have fractal cycles within cycles within cycles. And it's almost like you're at the end of the week, at the end of the month, at the end of the year, at the end of the century, and so forth, all coming together on December 21st, 2012.
Yeah, well, thank you for reminding about the WebBot. That goes exactly in alignment with this theory of the collective awakening that's happening. I'm actually going to use that in my PowerPoint, too. But you're right. That's what I see now. This as we come into this spring, it's like the first day of spring, which is really the first day of the year, all cycles kind of cleanse themselves and renew themselves. It's like your hard drive is flushed clean, and we have a chance to create something new for humanity, for ourselves, for the planet. And guess what? All of the galaxy, all the community that exists, all of the consciousness that exists out there is really waiting for us to do something. And I think this is what the Mayans saw in their long count that now ends. Of course, there's every ending has a beginning, so I don't want to just dwell on the fact that it's ending. It's actually a beginning. We're coming into a new beginning, and that's what's glorious, and that's what has endured through the hardships of these times. And that's why the multidimensional awakening of who we truly are as spiritual beings will become, I predict, the overarching awareness of humanity. Of course, that may take a while for it to sink through to all those people drinking beer and watching the football game. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But, you know, we have to there's a movement that's already happening, and I think it's unstoppable in a sense, you know. It's happening everywhere. When I travel around the planet, I see people in every single country waking up to what consciousness is. The biggest spiritual movement are the people who call themselves spiritual but not religious. That is a big website on the internet. So what I'm saying is the time for the old religion that dominated the lower trough of this cycle to sort of vanish into what they were trying to say in the beginning, that there's really only spirit and our connection to spirit, and that the cycles of change that are upon us now is the awakening of our direct connection, the gnosis of who we really are. And that's a glorious time.
You're absolutely right, Alan. T.S. Eliot said, "In the end is my beginning." And as Joseph Campbell pointed out, in his studies of all religions, he said there is only one myth. It's just told time and time again in different regions, at different times, in different cultures and languages. And very often we're talking about the same spirit of God while giving it a different proper noun. So when we look at the similarities between the Upanishads, the book of Genesis, and so forth, and many, many examples which he gave throughout his career, we realize that there is an interconnectedness in all of our consciousness. And Alan, you're so right. That consciousness is rising all across the world right now. All boats are rising with this tide because, I totally agree with you, because it is time. And now that we're going into a new spring, this summer, could last for some 13,000 years. Is that true, Alan?
Absolutely. That's what I predict. It's going to last at least on the upswing for 13,000 years, and we'll be able to gain the wisdom of what we have not yet awakened, the true intelligence in who we are. And our DNA, that's coming online. You know, people talk about 12-strand DNA. I don't know, but the junk DNA, which was never junk, is coming online to facilitate a new morphogenetic field. It means that we're capable of doing incredible things with our bodies, beyond our bodies, activating the biophotonic elements within our bodies to start to ascend our bodies to greater frequencies of awareness. As we move into greater frequencies, more of the intelligence of that we are, our unifying with all of creation, becomes a kind of global awareness for humanity to birth itself into. So the ideas of religion, they were all pointing to the same thing. But the problem with religion is it became about the religion. Christianity, Islam, Judaism, the Western religions in particular, became very attached to their dogmas and modes of creation. They really were, the religions are the finger pointing to the moon. The moon is the spirit, but it's like not to get off caught up in the finger, it's getting caught up in where it's pointing to. But that's been the fundamental dogmas of religious fanaticism that had us dwell on, no, it's about these fundamental principles, where it's really about transcending these fundamental principles. And that's the new time we're emerging into. That's the real awakening, because I think religion in general has done a lot to limit the possibilities of who we are. I mean, even though the religious leaders themselves were masters that were beyond the dogmas. I mean, I don't think Jesus was a Christian and Buddha wasn't a Buddhist. So they all pointed the way.
I'm sorry. That was very good. I like that.
No, but it's true. It's true. It's like this is the time of the awakening of the true spirit. We don't need a middleman between who and what we are. You know?
We are like cells in a great organism, and there is the God and the Goddess within us all. And if I may editorialize on a positive note, when we look at these times of disagreement, fighting, and strife, and so forth, well, I truly believe that our grandchildren will sit down, grandchildren of Muslim, grandchildren of Christian, grandchildren of Jewish, grandchildren of every other religion, and they'll sit down. And they'll look back on these times and they'll consider what we're going through now to be history. And this will be something for them to study so that they don't make some of the same mistakes that we're making now. So our grandchildren are going to play together. They're going to intermarry. We are all one family. And I hope that as we go through our temporal existences, that we may remember that point. I don't editorialize very often, but I wanted to say that.
But I just want to throw this out to you, and not to like squash your whole theory, but George Bernard Shaw said about history, what we learn from history is that we learn nothing from history.
Yes, that's right. Well, we're going into a brighter time. Our history that we can remember only goes back at a stretch some 6,000 years, but we're moving through cycles that are much longer than that. We're moving on something that coincides with the Platonic year, the great year, a 26,000-year precession of the equinoxes, our ride up and down above the galactic plane. And we're moving out of a stone age of consciousness into a silver age, which will lead to a golden era of consciousness. So we are taking evolutionary steps. You know, I saw an interview with Deepak Chopra, lately. Now, you know Deepak Chopra. As a matter of fact, I recently watched an interview where he interviewed you and introduced you as his friend. And in another interview I saw with him, he said that we go through evolutionary advances where we arise slowly through our evolutionary path over great periods of time. But then inexplicably, every now and then, we will take an evolutionary step upward and go for a slow progress for a long time. And then here comes this great leap upward in a very short period of time. Now, that's significant because he believes that we are reaching a critical mass right now and that we're on a verge of going through the next evolutionary step in human development and advancement. So he calls it going from the era of survival of the strongest to survival of the wisest. And this ties in with what you were saying, Alan, that we're going into a time of more gnosis. We're not going to be agnostic. Right. We're going to have gnosis in a new era.
I don't think it's about survival anymore. We have to go beyond survival if we're going to survive. It's a time of thriving, not surviving. And this thriving isn't necessarily for the wise. It's for the collective. It's for the humanity. It's for the sense of can we feel each other? Can we be aware and sensitive to each other's needs? It's a kind of reorganizing of the whole planet where no one's left behind. And that's what the whole Occupy movement's been about. That's what all these movements of political consciousness has been aware of. And what Deepak was referring to in cycles of jumping is what's called punctuated equilibrium, where this is what the biologists call, suddenly there's a shift in the field, and boom, there's new species that appear, and that's why nothing looks like an elephant. So this goes back to why, as we move above the galactic equator, we're coming into new cosmic rays. There's new things hitting our genetics, which are morphing and changing the field of our intelligence that is making us into a new species. That's what I meant by the latent factor in the junk DNA is actually being potentialized to become something new. We are waking up into becoming a universal being. We're being awoken into a galactic family that has been waiting for us to wake out of our sleep, our sleepy, groggy, juvenile, angry, dark phase of humanity. As we come into these, we realize that the universe, the cosmos, the multiverse is alive and awake with consciousness that is waiting for us to be embraced. So there's so much coming online. As we come into that new awareness, what I call the fifth dimensional awareness, we do become a new species. We are becoming a new species. And that is what I think December 21st, 2012 marks the punctuated equilibrium of our leap into a new possibility.
That's very well said, Alan. Folks, you're listening to the Cycles of Change radio program here at blogtalkradio.com/cycles. We're speaking with Alan Steinfeld of New Realities at newrealities.com. So here we are talking about human spirit, our concept of concepts, where we're coming from, where we're going. Why are we talking about this on a show about cycles? Why aren't we talking about the population of lemmings in Canada? Why aren't we talking about fluctuations in the stock market? Because we have gone beyond the cycles that we will see rise and fall within our lifetime to see the great eras that we have been passing through across millennia. Why? Because these cycles are at a turning point right now. We are going to see a transition of a 26,000-year cycle coming up, not only in our lifetime, but happening at an ecliptic point this year, December 21, 2012, as there's an ecliptic between the position of the Earth, the Sun, the center of the galaxy, where there is a black hole in the center of the galaxy, the dark rift, as the Mayans observed, dark spot in the sky. And this may very well mean that we are going to go into a spring, as it were, a season, spring and summer of 13,000 years, where it's going to affect most of all our consciousness, our view, our humanity, how we are as a species, our evolutionary development, how we perceive each other, how we relate to divinity, to cosmos, and everything else. All of these things are going to be affected by the change in cycles. I'm really excited about this, Alan.
Well, it's an incredible time for humanity because what has been planted in our DNA, in our genetics, in the unawakened parts of our brain have been waiting for this time to come online. It's as if there was a program in our hardware embedded that wouldn't be activated until we had a whole upgrade of the system. So that's what's going on now. As we upgrade the system with this alignment, we can access these new programs. And then as we access these new programs, we're sort of in new territory, what I call new realities. We're here to cognize something we have yet to recognize. That's the awareness of new realities. Hey, we're not in Kansas anymore. There's something happened here, and I'm not sure what exactly it is, but no one does. We are moving into brand new territory, and that's what is so, so exciting about the times ahead. And we can't compare it to what we know or what we have known. The unknown beckons us with greater authority. That's what Terence McKenna called it, the thing at the edge of history. He had a great word for it. The unmanifest at the edge of history is what's beckoning us forward. But, you know, I think other religions were aware of this, too, in the Jewish religion. And not to highlight the religion, they talked about the age of the Messiah as the ending of this 6,000 years in their calendar history. Not that I believe that, but we are coming up to, you know, we're at 5,000-something within the Jewish calendar. The Mayans, of course, and the Hindus said this is the end of Kali Yuga. An astrologer said this is the beginning of the age of Aquarius. So all those elements of the Aquarian age is exactly what we're looking to at this point of December 21st, 2012. Harmony, understanding, sympathy, and peace abound, a new level of consciousness. This is all the, I happen to be an Aquarian, so it's like all the elements of what makes Aquarian such a kind of different sign in the zodiac, that they're really not led by their emotional body, but they're led by a higher awareness of consciousness, is what's coming out at this time. Does all this hook, I know you've done a lot of work on cycles and cycles of change. Does this thesis I put forward kind of really go in alignment with what you've noticed as cycles of change?
Yes. Speaking of a confluence of so many cycles reaching a transitional point at the same time, whether it's astrological or whether it's prophecy, whether it's prediction, whether it's our intersection with the ecliptic, observations of Graham Hancock, anybody else. Another one that coincides with this is that in my study of world cycles, these are cycles that last hundreds of years long. There is a very rare confluence going on right now that from 2000 to 2012, we have two great cycles, what I call the world emotional cycle and the world intellectual cycle, are simultaneously crossing up out of the low into the high half at the same time. And we are in that transition right now. We've been in it since 2000. That's why we're seeing the shakeup and the Arab Spring and the wars that we've been having and the economic collapses that we've been having. So that's just one more example of a convergence of cycles. We're in the final 90 seconds here, talking about the seasons of our life, the fractal relationship in eras great and small, and how we can recognize them in the subtle body, in the awareness on the subtle level, our emotional intelligence throughout history. Alan, I want to thank you for sharing these insights. You've made everything explainable to us because you understand it so well. Alan, I hope more people visit you at newrealities.com, where you can find so many upcoming events, videos, podcasts, articles, and more. It's a site to check out at newrealities.com. Alan, thank you again for being here tonight.
Well, thank you. It's been a real honor and a lot of fun to talk to someone who really understands this, who's in alignment with it, who validates these theories that I've sort of harness from all the years of workshops and events and meeting great teachers. I mean, people are talking about this, but, you know, as we come together into a greater awareness, more of what we've been in agreement with here tonight will, I think, catch on into a collective awareness of humanity, and we will have a leap in consciousness and become a new species right here.
I think that holds true, and the scholars who normally disagree are agreeing on this time. Thank you for listening to the Cycles of Change radio program. I'm David Katzmeyer, your host. Tune again next week. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.